We're back with All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz.
We are all very excited for Rahm as he takes on a new challenge for which he is extraordinarily well qualified.
I'm energized by the prospect of new challenges and eager to see what I can do to make our hometown even greater.
That's presumptive Democratic candidate for mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, and his former boss, President Barack Obama. Emanuel submitted his resignation as White House chief of staff yesterday. I'm joined by James Fallows of The Atlantic now. Jim, Christina Romer's gone. Peter Orszag's gone. Larry Summers is leaving. Now, Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff. These are some pretty key advisors to the president. Is there any indication how this shakeup will affect the Obama White House, if at all?
I'd say yes, sort of. I mean, we certainly know the next 2 years of the administration are going to be different from the first 2 years because the makeup of the Congress will be quite different. A presidential election is coming along, and there are these changes of personality. And we heard the clip from Rahm Emanuel. That was a relatively clean section of his discourse. And Peter Rouse is known as a more sort of understated person. So probably in past changes of White House chief of staff, this is quite like the change from Donald Regan, who was one of Ronald Reagan's chiefs of staff, to Howard Baker, a former senator and very much of a sort of Washington person, or John Sununu, who was a quite abrasive person with abrasive potential, being replaced by Samuel Skinner for the first George Bush. And I would argue that while these personalities are significant and different, they are symptoms rather than moving causes of a change in the political landscape, that Barack Obama will have more Republicans to deal with for the next 2 years. And so perhaps this kind of White House chief of staff reflects that need.
Jim, shifting gears, this past week, the parent company of Fox News, News Corp, made a $1 million donation to a GOP-friendly group, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And as we heard earlier in the program, Jim, a lot of anonymous money now financing this election season.
This really is a new phenomenon in a sense. I've been interviewing a number of candidates in the last week or two, and they say just how unprecedented it is to have these tons of money and they don't know where they're coming from. And I think really the only precedent, as I've been thinking about it, is one, you know, 100 plus years ago, sort of the gilded age of American politics, where you had U.S. senators were essentially bought and sold by corporations back in the late 19th century. That's why we had the 17th Amendment for a direct election. And you had all sorts of other corruption of money basically running politics. The silver lining we might take is that a lot of the reform movements of the early 20th century in the muckrakers in journalism, the progressives and the populists and all sorts of other cleanup measures were in response to this. So perhaps we're starting, perhaps that phase of the cycle is ahead.
Jim, I was chatting with my dad about politics, as we often do recently, and he basically wanted to know why the federal government, you know, Congress or the administration is not doing more to demand that China stop manipulating its currency. Well, this week Congress has tried to do something. Will it make any difference?
The short answer is no. And I guess the short answer I would give to your father is there's not that much that the U.S. government can directly do. I think the most objectionable part of Chinese trade practices from the U.S. point of view are things like its so-called indigenous innovation policy, which freezes out a lot of foreign firms, and some others where the U.S. is always filing suits and actions with the World Trade Organization.
Jim, why don't we have a whole lot of leverage?
I think there are two big challenges from the U.S. point of view. One is a very, very large share of the of total exports from China, manufactured exports, are by U.S. firms. You know, Apple makes its computers in China, and so does Dell, and so does HP, and so does basically any high-tech company you can think of. And you can argue that this has more profits coming to U.S. Corporate owners than stay in China, but it's one big source of the imbalance. The other, of course, is if China is lending us so much money, that's because we are borrowing so much money. And so a very, very major source of that economic imbalance is our own behavior with debt.
That's James Fallows. He's the national correspondent for The Atlantic. You can find his blog at jamesfallows.theatlantic.com. Jim, as always, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Guy.